The National Defense Authorization Act is up for the House and Senate Armed Services Committee. The full House committee starting to work on the bill next week. It's one of the items inside the DOD reporter's notebook. My colleague Jared Serbu is here. And it just kind of fits the narrative, Jared, that we focused on this program in the last couple of weeks. And that is the House Appropriations Committees are moving bills. The NDAA is on the way. A budget resolution is going to be on the floor for both the House and probably the Senate to vote on this week. And it appears, at least for now, that all of the pieces of the budget puzzle are starting to fall into place in Congress. What do we know so far about the National Defense Authorization Act and the work that's coming forward?
Well, basically, things are falling together according to the schedule that you would usually expect. So what happened this week was the subcommittees of the House Appropriations Committee are starting to come forward with what they call their subcommittee marks, which are just little pieces of their individual jurisdictions of responsibility that will eventually flow in to the longer term, the longer debate that will happen in the House Armed Services Committee next week when they go through basically just a very long marathon session where lots of debates, lots of amendments. Amendments are offered. Each of those are debated. But the subcommittee markups that we started to see this week are really the building blocks for a lot of that are controlled by the subcommittee chairman. So one of the building blocks that happened this week that I don't think anyone was too surprised by was that they started right off by blocking another round of BRAC, which the Defense Department has asked for several years consecutively. One of the provisions in the readiness subcommittee's mark was that a BRAC round would be explicitly prohibited this year, but the attitude seems to be softening just slightly. In past years, Congress has put language into the bill that says not only can't you do a BRAC this year, but we don't want you to even study the possibility of doing it. We don't want you to even study the excess infrastructure that you have. There is another provision in this year's readiness subcommittee mark that would actually tell DOD to look out for 20 years, look at what the force structure it expects to have around the world, compare that with the individual categories of physical infrastructure that it has and that it thinks it will need, and compare those two things against each other. So they're basically saying, instead of no, not ever will we ever consider a BRAC, to maybe later we'll think about it.
And that's got to be encouraging for people in the Pentagon. Like your recent conversation with John Conger, that's probably something that he can at least hang his hat on, feel a little more comfortable about. But it strikes me, the cynic in me says a 20-year plan equals, if I'm a member of Congress, a 20-year plan equals when I'm not here anymore.
It does that, but I think another reason they're looking out 20 years is they want to drive home the point that, look, we think, for example, the Air Force thinks it's got more than 20% excess infrastructure. The Army thinks it's got about 18%, but those are really rough numbers. The point Congress is trying to drive home over and over again is, yes, you think you've got that based on right now, but what if the services need to grow again? What if they need to surge as they did over the past 10 years? Based on the responsibilities in Iraq and Afghanistan. So another thing that Congress, that the Readiness Subcommittee mark is telling DOD to do is make sure that you take into account any surge needs that you might have over the next 20 years. That's one of the reasons that they're taking such a long time horizon over this, in order to make sure that whatever plan DOD delivers back to them isn't just taking account for what their infrastructure needs are this year while the military is shrinking, but gives a realistic picture of what they might need if they need to grow again, which in some future conflict, they probably will.
You have a number of notes from the NDAA process that I really recommend. Anybody that cares about this process at all needs to go to federalnewsradio.com and find on the homepage inside the reporter's notebook and click on them. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 main provisions that you're writing about that I think folks will want to know about if they care about this process. However, you're also writing about a very interesting whistleblower case, my colleague Jared Serbu, our DOD reporter, that is very troubling if it turns out to be the way that it appears on the surface right now, Jared.
Yeah, so this deals with a gentleman named Jimmy Soans. He used to be the comptroller at the Defense Information Systems Agency for actually a really long time, from 2005 until 2013. He's a member of the Senior Executive Service. His only job now, as far as anyone can tell, is serving on a task group that's looking at financial management software within the Pentagon. According to his lawyers, he's been basically degraded in terms of responsibility for every time that he's raised concerns, both to DISA and to the Department of Defense. So what basically happened, and an important element of this also, I should mention, is that two senators from Virginia from Nebraska have sent a letter to Ashton Carter, the defense secretary, asking defense secretary Ashton Carter to look into potential whistleblower retaliation against Mr. Stones. So what basically happened was, back in 2012, he discovered what he thought was an anti-deficiency act based on a $323 million negative balance in DISA's working capital fund. He reported that up the chain of command, both to DISA's director and to the comptroller in the Pentagon. Basically, according to the Senate and according to his lawyers, he was immediately removed from his comptroller position, reassigned as the agency's inspector general. As soon as he got to that position, people who were in charge of his old position made new decisions that basically tried to resolve his concerns, but in a way that he thought was inappropriate. So he assigned his agency, which was then the inspector general's office, to review that in case it was in conflict with DOD's financial management regulations. An audit eventually determined that indeed that was the case, but while that audit was going on, he was reassigned again, demoting him yet again to another position dealing with information security. That whole cycle has gone on over the past several years until he eventually wound up into this obscure corner of the Pentagon where he isn't really doing very much, and certainly not doing anything in regard to financial management, which is what his job was supposed to be, and indeed was for the past 8 years. Worthwhile to point out also that while he was in that comptroller job in DISA, he had some significant accomplishments, one of which was getting DISA's first ever clean audit for 2011. So as the senators point out in their letter to Ash Carter, there's really no clear indication that all of the reassignments that have happened with Mr. Stones have anything to do with job performance. It sure looks like there's at least suspicion that this was a whistleblower retaliation case. So he also has a case pending before the Office of Special Counsel, and we'll wait for the outcome of that.
And you have all the details inside the reporter's notebook this week on federalnewsradio.com. You're also writing about the Pentagon speeding up investigations of official misconduct and some attention that the Navy is starting to pay to small businesses. It's terrific information, as always, Jared. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Francis.